and yet she couldn't follow Minnie either. Minnie didn't want her help. Aru had nothing to offer. Her only natural gift was lying. That wasn't a very heroic quality. Aru was nearly at the end of the library's row A when a strange book caught her eye. It was small and bright green. It bounced up and down when she got close. The title was simple. Aru. Curious, she reached for it and opened the front cover. There she was. There was a picture of her at school. And there was another picture of her waiting at home for her mom. She rifled through the pages, her heart racing. There was even an illustration of her and Minnie at Madame B's beauty salon. Aru was in the middle of talking. In the next painting, Aru was looking down triumphantly in the Court of the Seasons. She tried to flip to the end, but the pages were glued together. Minnie had said something about the library of the Night Bazaar, that this place held the stories of everything and everyone, including her. Maybe it meant that her story wasn't finished just yet. She had deceived both Madame B and the Seasons, but her lies hadn't been bad. They had led to something good. She'd talked herself and Minnie out of trouble and gotten them new weapons. Maybe her gift wasn't lying. Maybe her gift was imagination. Imagination was neither good nor bad. It was a little bit of both. Just like her. Was Arjuna at all like this? Did he ever lie or worry that he was more bad than good? The legends made him sound perfect. But maybe if he'd grown up the way she did, he would have made mistakes too. It was hard to judge, based on a story, what he might really have been like. If she were writing about herself, she wouldn't put in the bad parts, only the good. Tales are slippery, her mother had often said. The truth of a story depends on who is telling it. If that Aru book was to be believed, it meant that her story wasn't finished yet. Aru glanced at her palm. Whatever that Sanskrit number was, it looked too fancy to be a one. She was sure there was still some time left. She closed her hand into a fist. Forget the sleeper. I'm going to fix this. Aru shut the book. Part of her wanted to take it with her, but she stopped herself. It reminded her of the time she'd passed a cemetery that had an apple tree. The fruit looked like jewels, and Aru had wanted to pluck one. But she had the weirdest sensation you weren't supposed to take them, let alone eat them. That was how she felt about the book. Aru ran her finger along its green spine and felt an answering trace down her back. Then she forced herself to put it back on the shelf. As Aru rounded the corner, something bright caught her eye. It was the birdcage, the one the sleeper had carried. She remembered now. It had rolled away from him. It had come to rest in the B aisle. The shelves were noisy and it smelled like vanilla here. Baby, a small blue book, was wailing, while backhand and backward took turns smacking each other with their covers. Aru knelt and picked up the birdcage. It seemed odd that the sleeper had taken the bird, but not the cage. Rattling around inside were a few small clay figurines, each no longer than her pinky. She reached in and pulled out a goat, a crocodile, a pigeon, a snake, an owl, and a peacock. There was even a seven-headed horse, and a tiger with its mouth still open in a roar. As she arranged the animals in a line on the floor, she frowned. Didn't the goddess Durga ride a tiger? And she could have sworn that the god of war rode a peacock. Why would the sleeper be carrying this with him? Aru traced the manes of the seven-headed horse. Indra, her father, rode an animal like this, except it wasn't made of clay. Duh. In the stories, the creature was said to shine brighter than the moon. Aru pulled the glowing ball from her pocket so she could see the figurines better. The moment the light of Indra fell upon the clay, The entire chamber began to quake. Aru dropped the horse. Had it really been made of clay, it would have exploded into shards. But it didn't. On the contrary, it began to grow. And not just the horse, but all the animals. Aru scuttled backward. The ball in her hand glowed so bright she couldn't make out the books anymore. Light burst around her. The hubbub of the B section faded and was replaced by new sounds. The rustling of wings, the clop of hooves on the floor, the chuffing of a tiger, even the hiss of a snake. Aru blinked, her eyes adjusting. Standing before her were the stolen mounts of the gods. So that's what the sleeper was carrying the whole time. How could he leave it behind? Oh, thought Aru. The magical headband from summer that Minnie had thrown at him. Whoever wears this will forget something important. Welp, it had definitely worked. As soon as they were out of his sight, the sleeper had forgotten all about the precious mounts. There was a beautiful burnished orange tiger, a stately peacock that trailed jewels, a stunningly white owl. But the creature that stole her breath was none other than the seven-headed horse. It trotted toward Aru, all of its heads lowering at once.
Thank you, daughter of Indra, said the horse,
speaking from all seven of its mouths in seven melodious voices.
You have freed us from imprisonment.
One by one, the mounts walked forward. The tiger nuzzled her hand. The peacock nipped her fingers affectionately. The owl lowered its head.
Merely call for us, and we will come to your aid, Pandava, said the owl.
They took off, leaping and flying and trotting into the air, until only the horse was left.
You have somewhere to be, don't you?
Asked the horse. Aru looked down at the waves on her knuckles and nodded. The third key, the sip of old age, was still out there.
I shall take you, said the horse. None can move faster than I, for I move at the speed of thought.
Aru had never ridden a horse. Unless you counted sitting on a rainbow-colored unicorn while revolving on a carousel and yelling giddy up, which definitely shouldn't count. A step stool magically appeared on the left side of the horse. Aru clambered atop it, shoving the ball back into her pocket. She swung her legs over the horse's broad back.
Are you ready, daughter of Indra?
It asked. Nope, said Aru. She took a deep breath. But let's go anyway. 19. I really, really wouldn't do that. There are many ways to make an entrance. Aru, who had watched way too many movies, staunchly believed your three best options were. 1. You could show up like Aragorn in the last Lord of the Rings movie and raise your sword while a bunch of ghosts spilled out behind you. 2. You could show up like John McClane in every Die Hard movie screaming, Yippee-ki-yay, while waving a machine gun. Or 3. You could show up like an actor in every Bollywood movie with an invisible wind blowing through your hair and everyone suddenly dancing around you. But after today, she was going to have to change that list. Because honestly, riding in on a seven-headed horse beat all those options. They burst through the night bazaar to a flurry of gasps. Shopping carts squealed and scattered. Tents leaped out of the way, tassels wrapping around them like someone hugging themselves after a bad fright. A raksha, who had just purchased a snack from a street vendor, dropped his food. A smaller raksha cackled, swooped down, and ate it. They crossed through worlds that had cities filled with monsters, and, she was almost certain, worlds where monsters made cities. She saw a giant scaly creature squish a mountain with its thumb, muttering, Make a mountain out of a molehill, you say? Ha! How about making a mountain into a molehill? That's far more interesting. Yes, yes. They charged through a cloud bank. On the other side, there was nothing but a vast expanse of ocean. But it was unlike any ocean Aru had ever seen. It was not blue or gray or even greenish. It was as white as milk. A small stone island stuck out of the middle like a lump of oatmeal in a cereal bowl.
That was once the pedestal from which the ocean of milk was churned, said the horse.
Just like that, Aru knew where she was. In the museum's panorama back home, there was an illustration of the ocean of milk. Long ago, a powerful sage cursed the gods, causing them to lose their immortality. Weakened and in trouble, they churned the ocean to get the nectar of immortality. When they started churning, poison burst into the air. The gods asked Shiva, the lord of destruction, to get rid of it. He drank it down, and the poison turned his throat blue. Aru always liked lying down in the panorama theater where it was cold and dark and silent, watching the stories of the gods and goddesses rotate around her. Which is how she knew that there had been a battle long ago over the nectar of immortality. The gods had not churned the ocean by themselves. They had needed the help of the asuras, the demons. But when the ocean finally gave up the secret of immortality, the gods tricked the asuras and took all the nectar for themselves. Aru shuddered. She wondered how long a demon could hold a grudge. They might not be able to live eternally like the gods, but they could be reincarnated from one life to the next, forever and ever. The seven-headed horse began to descend. It slowed to a moderate clip once they reached the island's shore. Past the sand dunes yawned the entrance of a large tunnel. Aru thought it would look old and creepy inside, but it turned out to be just an abandoned office space. Marble cubicles had been cut into either side of the tunnel. They were all unoccupied. Some contained corkboards pinned with photographs, a headset, like the kind a telemarketer might use, except these were made of gold and studded with diamonds, had been left behind on each desk. Every so often she saw a vending machine, but they didn't offer candy or chips. Instead, they had things like 7 hours of sleep, a good daydream, a very good daydream, with, Aru noticed, a strange winking face beside it, a shot of eloquence, and a miniature antibacterial hand sanitizer. Posters covered with a thin layer of dust still adorned the tunnels. A gleaming city of gold was featured on one of them. Scrawled across it were the words, "Come visit the city of Lanka, the premier destination of dreams and nightmares. Service, gold, food, gold, entertainment. Not gory, but definitely has moments of gore." Another poster advertised an underwater city with a very attractive Naga model who was winking and bearing shiny fangs. "The City of Snakes. Come for the scenery, stay for the slithering beauties." But wherever Aru looked, there was no sign of Minnie.
"This is the tourism headquarters of the other world," explained the horse. "But it's currently closed. Nobody will disturb you while you're here."
One part of the tunnel was boarded up. A large sign proclaimed, "No touching," and "Caution under renovation." A bitter smell wafted between the planks of wood hammered over the opening. But there was enough space under the boards that someone the size of Minnie, but not necessarily Minnie's size, might be able to squeeze through to the other side. It was here that the horse stopped.
"This is where I leave you, daughter of Indra."
It knelt so she could dismount. "Thanks for the lift," said Aru. Her legs felt wobbly when she slid off.
"Call on us when you have need."
What constituted need? Because she'd really love to show up to school on a seven-headed horse. All those sleek black cars would probably explode on the spot. The horse seemed to guess at what she was thinking because it whinnied.
Urgent need, it clarified.
Wait, what's your name?
Uchai Shravas, it replied.
Ucha, maybe I could just whistle? The horse huffed. So that's a no on the whistling, said Aru.
Declare your name to the sky. We shall hear and answer.
The horse bowed its 7 heads, then took off the way it came. Aru didn't stay to watch it disappear. She crawled under the planks, covering her nose with her hand. This place stank. Minnie would probably be concerned that the whole room was full of toxic fumes. She found herself in a narrow alley. When it opened into a cave, Aru knew where the strange smell was coming from. In the center of the space stood a cauldron the size of a claw-footed bathtub, but the cauldron wasn't made of iron or steel. It was made of vapors. It was transparent enough that Aru could see blue liquid sloshing angrily inside it. Trying to contain a liquid with only vapors seemed like a really bad idea, and judging from the way the whole thing kept quivering, it looked like it was ready to burst at any moment. But there was also something solid inside, about the size of her shoe, floating on top of the blue liquid. The Mendi design on her fingers pulsed gently. Was that shoe the third key? If so, how was she supposed to get it out? Just behind the cauldron crouched a huge statue of Shiva, the Lord of Destruction. He bent over the cauldron, his mouth wide open as if shocked by its contents. Aru couldn't see the rest of the statue. It disappeared behind the ledge on which the cauldron bubbled. Aru? Called a familiar voice. There, standing off to the side with a notebook in her hand and a pen in the other, was Minnie. The two of them regarded each other warily. Aru wasn't sure what to say. She had already apologized, but it never hurt to say I'm sorry again. And the truth was that Aru hadn't come here just to save her own skin. She had come because Minnie was her friend. Plus, she'd made a promise not to leave her behind. She might fib a little, but she never broke her promises. Minnie, I'm sorry, she started. At the very same time, Minnie said, I may have overreacted.
Ach, you go first, they both said, again at the same time.
Now they glared.
Nose goes, declared Aru, quickly smacking her nose.
Did it hurt a bit? Yes. Would she do it again to avoid having to discuss her feelings first? 100% yes.
Minnie, who had not reached for her nose, grumbled.
Fine, she said. All I was going to say was that maybe I shouldn't have left you like that. I hate when people do that to me. And I know you didn't meant to hurt anyone when you lit the...
Apology accepted, said Aru, feeling immensely relieved.
Now, I just want you to know that I understand how you feel, continued Minnie. My parents, well, I love them. And they love me. My family is great, honestly. But they didn't think I'd be a Pandava. They thought it was a mistake. I guess it just meant a lot that you believed in me. And I get that maybe you felt like that too, like an imposter, and probably that's why you lit the lamp.
Aru didn't say anything for a moment. She wasn't mad or embarrassed. She was grateful. She'd found someone she could breathe easier around, and it hurt. In a good way.
I do believe in you, Minnie, she said. I think you're really smart. Definitely a bit on the neurotic side, but totally smart. And brave, too.
She meant it, with all her heart. Maybe Minnie could see that, because she smiled and stuck out her elbow. Aru bumped it, and she knew they were good.
Did you see that thing floating in the cauldron? Asked Aru. Yep, I'm guessing it's the third key.
but I don't know how to get it out. Do we have to sip from the cauldron?
Sip from that bubbling vat of gross blue liquid?
Ew, said Aru. Well, I already bit a book, so if anyone's going to be sipping whatever that is, it's not me. That is poison. Specifically, Hala Hala poison.
Okay, definitely not drinking it.
It's the same poison that was released when the gods turned the ocean of milk. It will kill us. Please tell me you read the sign.
She pointed to a poster off to the side. Aru skimmed it briefly. Once she read, likelihood of dismemberment, she stopped.
Nope. According to the warnings, if you touch the cauldron, the whole thing will explode, said Minnie. It happens once a year, kinda like a volcano, which is why this place is blocked off. We'd both die.
Then Aru had an idea.
Maybe I can call in a favor.
She told Minnie about the cage full of godly mounts. When she was finished, Minnie looked impressed and even a little envious.
A seven-headed horse? She asked. Can you imagine all of its neural pathways? That would be fascinating to study.
Focus, Minnie.
Okay, okay. Well, you can't even call in that favor. The rules specify that no animals may drain the poison. Apparently, it can turn them into huge monsters that eat everything around them. Details, details, said Minnie, chewing her pencil. There's gotta be a trick to this.
What about creating an illusion with your mirror? Asked Aru.
Not possible.
Minnie drew out the compact. It shimmered, but it wouldn't conjure anything, and Aru's ping-pong ball didn't offer any clues either. It wasn't even glowing.
It's like a magical dead zone, said Minnie.
I don't even think our gifts from the seasons will work. I couldn't get the bakery box from spring to open, and the only stuff around here is rocks and a big old fire.
Huh?
Minnie pointed upward, and Aru's mouth fell open. A giant chandelier of fire hung from the ceiling. The flames twisted, and embers sparked but didn't fall to the ground. It looked weirdly shiny, as if the whole thing were encased in glass like a chemistry vial full of blue and gold flames.
I feel like the fire and the poison are connected somehow, said Minnie, chewing on her pencil. If we touch either of them, they'll explode.
But at least nothing will get past the entrance.
Wait. If the fire and poison can't get out of this room, why has the entire tourism office been evacuated? The smell. Also, they have designated vacation days. At least, that's what the sign says, said Minnie. This is the weirdest tourist spot.
Aru shrugged. Considering that the last place her class went to on a field trip was a museum of lunchboxes, a poison volcano sounded way cooler. And the other world apparently thought so too. A brightly painted wooden panel stood next to the cauldron, awaiting the next photo op. Visitors could stick their faces through a cutout hole. Allowances had been made for horns, cobra hoods, and multiple heads. And pretend they'd drunk the poison. On the bottom, there was a bucket for donations along with a small sign. Thanks for supporting your local haunting.
Aru circled the cauldron. So, short of trying to drink this thing and definitely dying, there's no way? I didn't say that. I just said we can't approach it like anyone who's had any experience with magic. A magical person would try to trick their way into emptying the cauldron.
Minnie's gaze had turned intense. She looked at the cauldron, then back at her notebook, then back at the cauldron.
It's a liquid.
Aru thought it would be uncharitable to say, duh, so she just nodded.
If you heat liquid, It can turn into a gas. Some of the poisonous liquid in the cauldron has become the poisonous vapors that are holding the liquid. Aru's head hurt. Was this really the time and place for a chemistry lesson? That's the trick, said Minnie, talking to herself. They don't want us to think with magic. We've got to think about it like any ordinary person would.
I've got a plan!
Minnie seemed so shocked by the idea that she could have a plan that it ended up sounding more like, I've got a plan?
Awesome, said Aru. What's it involve?
We've got to break it, she said, her whole face brightening.
And not with magic!
Wait, say what now?
Minnie reached for a small pebble on the ground. Minnie? And then she hurled it straight at the gigantic cauldron full of poison, hollering, For science!
20.
Welp, she did it.
If Aru had been politely indifferent to science before, now she straight up hated it. She watched as the pebble soared from Minnie's hand. It was a valiant throw. Nice arc. Very dramatic. But the pebble fell short and dropped about a hair breadth away from the cauldron. Aru breathed a sigh of relief. They were safe. But then the infernal pebble did what pebbles can't help but do. It rolled. Then tapped the cauldron.
Maybe that wasn't too strong of a...
Aru stopped as the cauldron began to quiver more violently. Its vapor sides began to swirl.
Nope. I take it back. We're dead.
We're not dead, said Minnie. I just wanted to stir up the liquid a little. We've got to hit the fire next.
Spewing poison isn't enough for you? Demanded Aru. You have to add fire to it?
The way this room has been designed, the heat from the fire above has turned some of the poison liquid into gas, reasoned Minnie. If we bring down all of the fire, it should vaporize all of the poison and leave behind only the third key.
The vapor shell of the cauldron began to split.
The cave ceiling trembled, and bits of black rock flaked down. The chandelier of fire swung back and forth.
Gather as many rocks as you can and start throwing them at the fire, said Minnie.
What if they hit the cauldron by mistake? We'll...
You said you believed in me, shouted Minnie. So believe me.
Aru clenched her jaw. All right, she said. She gathered up rocks, and together the two of them started pelting the fire. A cracking sound rolled through the cave. Aru looked up. Her guess had been right. The fire had been encased in something, and whatever it was that had been protecting them from the flames was beginning to break. Fire tumbled down in long, flaming ribbons. In a moment, it would meet the poisonous vapor and liquid of the cauldron.
Run! Shouted Minnie. To the entrance!
Aru ran, just as blue plumes of poison spiraled into the air. She gagged. The smell was awful. Her toe had barely crossed the threshold when she heard a boom behind her. The cauldron exploded. Out of the corner of her eye, Aru saw a giant wave of rising poison liquid. A burst of heat and light threw her and Minnie onto their backs. Aru blinked and looked up to see a wall of flames towering above them, blocking the cave entrance. The wave hit the threshold of the entrance and stopped. Aru heard sizzling and steaming, but the poison had disappeared. The magical flames had formed some kind of fence and must have cooked up all the liquid. Minnie walked to her side out of breath, but her face shining.
See? Enough heat and time will turn a liquid into a gas.
That was incredible, said Aru. How'd you think of that?
Minnie just beamed.
Aru couldn't help recalling what Lord Hanuman had said before they'd left the court of the sky, about how sometimes you needed someone to remind you of how powerful you were. Then you would surprise even yourself. All the flames in the room had burned out. Minnie tiptoed carefully toward the center of the cave. Where the cauldron had been, there was a scorch mark on the ground. A tiny bit of the poison had found shelter from the fire in a new place. The statue of Shiva, who had once crouched open-mouthed behind it, now his throat glowed bright blue. Also on the ground stood a small turquoise goblet. Aru wondered whether that was the shoe-like thing that had been floating in the cauldron. A silver liquid filled the cup. Minnie picked it up gingerly. "The third key," she said. "A sip of old age." Aru reached for it, grimacing. She tried to dump out the liquid, but it didn't budge. Magic was often a stickler for rules. Rude. "It should be your turn," Aru said. "But let me guess. I have to sip this because you saved our butts back there." "Yep," said Minnie. Aru gagged, just looking at it. "What if it's poison? It came from a poisonous cauldron, after all." Minnie shrugged. "Then maybe I could save you with one of Spring's petty fours." Aru was still doubtful. "What if I swallow the key?" "I wouldn't recommend doing that. When I was 3, I ate my mom's engagement ring, and they gave me a bunch of bananas, and they had to..." "Never mind, I don't want to know. Drink up, or I'll finish the story." "You are evil." Minnie crossed her arms over her chest. "I believe in fairness." Aru took the tiniest of sips, the kind she occasionally took from her mom's Sunday glass of wine, just to see why people fussed over the stuff. She always ended up spitting out the foul-tasting liquid. But old age didn't taste bad. It reminded Aru of her birthday last year. Her mom had taken them to a fancy Italian restaurant. Aru had eaten so much that she'd fallen asleep in the car. Her mom had picked her up. Aru remembered because she kept pretending to be asleep, and carried her to bed. The sip of old age was like that, a happy kind of fullness. A weight pressed down on her tongue. Startled, she spat it out and found a small white key. It was made of bone.
"Nope."
"Ah!" screamed Aru. She started to scrape her tongue. Then she realized she hadn't washed her hands since Brahmasura became a pile of ashes. Aru spat on the ground. "The third key," said Minnie excitedly. "Cool! It's a bone! I wonder if it was a phalanx, or maybe a..." Aru glared at her, and Minnie quickly changed the subject. "We did it," said Minnie. "We got all 3 keys to get inside the Kingdom of Death." Despite being thoroughly grossed out, Aru smiled. They'd really done it. And what made it even better was that Minnie wasn't standing quite so timidly anymore. With the glow of the poison in Shiva's mouth behind her, it almost looked like she had a halo. "Ready?" asked Aru. Minnie nodded. Aru's palms had started to sweat. Her hair felt pulled too tight. Part of her was wondering whether she should make a last-minute bathroom run, because there was no telling whether the underworld had public restrooms. But maybe that was just nerves. The girls laid down the 3 keys in a row. The sprig of youth, the coin from the bite of adulthood, now shiny again, and the bone key. Aru wasn't sure what was supposed to happen next, but that didn't matter, because the keys knew what to do. At once they melted and ran together, forming a puddle of light. Aru held her breath as the puddle rose, growing higher and higher, until it was about the height of the 7-headed horse that that had carried her across the ocean of milk. In the darkness of the cave, a door took shape. The door to the kingdom of death. 21. The door and the dogs. The door to the kingdom of death was wrought of bone and leaf and light. Minnie raised her hand to touch it. Then she shook her head.
I thought I'd feel differently, she said.
About what? Asked Aru.
About the door and where it was going.
It's going to the kingdom of death. That's all.
Yes, but this is the door to my...
Minnie stopped and stuttered.
I mean, I guess he really isn't my... my...
Dad? Minnie flinched.
Yeah, that. But I don't know him, and he doesn't know me. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. Boo and my parents said he's my soul dad, not my home dad. But I guess I hoped he'd do something other than give me a mirror, you know?
No, she didn't know.
Aru knew it was a little mean, but she didn't feel that bad for Minnie.
Aru was in the same boat, and she didn't have a home dad to comfort her. Yeah, Indra might have made her soul. But where was her real father? He could still be out there. Somewhere. And whoever he was, he hadn't wanted her. She pushed down that surge of envy. It wasn't Minnie's fault.
What are you going to do if you meet the Dharma Raja?
I'll just thank him for letting me exist, I guess. I don't know. It's weird. Minnie took a deep breath.
Okay, I'm ready now.
Aru reached for the doorknob, but it shocked her hand. She pulled back, stung.
I think you should do it.
Me? Why?
Because you're the daughter of death. It's like going into your house. What if it shocks me too?
Aru shrugged.
Maybe say your name first?
Minnie looked doubtful, but she squared her shoulders.
My name is Yamini Kapoor Mercado Lopez, and this is...
She turned to Aru and hissed,
I don't know your last name.
Aru was tempted to say that her name was Bond, James Bond.
Aru Shah.
No middle name? She shrugged again.
If I have one, no one ever told me what it was.
Minnie nodded, apparently satisfied, then continued talking to the door.
Aru Shah. We are entering the kingdom of death. Because we have been sent on a quest to awaken the celestial weapons, so that time doesn't end, and also to find out how to stop this really awful demon by looking for answers in the pool of the...
Last?
Pool of the past, whispered Aru.
Pool of the past, finished Minnie.
Please and thank you.
The door didn't budge. Then again, Minnie hadn't pushed it.
Why aren't you even trying to open it? Demanded Aru. It's not polite to force things.
With that, the door gave way with a sigh and a groan. From the side, the door to the kingdom of death was as slim as a closed laptop. And yet the moment Minnie stepped inside, she disappeared. It was as if she had stepped into a slice in the air. After a few seconds, Minnie poked her head out.
Are you coming or not?
Aru's stomach turned. She couldn't remember any stories about the halls of the dead. But just the idea of them was enough to scare her. She kept imagining faceless ghosts behind the door. Fires that never went out. A sky devoid of stars. And then she imagined her mom's face frozen in horror. Her hair falling around her. She remembered Boo lying limp in the sleeper's hand. Those images made her move.
It's an adventure, she said, trying to rally herself.
Aru's hand drifted to the pants pocket where she kept the ping pong ball.
It was warm and reassuring. It's fine. This is fine. Everything is fine, she muttered to herself. She placed her foot across the threshold. A frigid wind picked up the hairs on the nape of her neck. On the breeze, she could hear the final words of people who had died.
No, not yet. And, please make sure someone remembers to feed Snowball. And, I hope someone clears my internet browser.
But mostly, Aru heard love.
Tell my family I love them. Tell my wife I love her. Tell my children I love them. Tell Snowball I love her.
Aru felt a sharp twist in her heart. Had she told her mother she loved her before she left the museum with Boo?
There was no going back now. The moment she stepped into the Kingdom of Death, the door disappeared. She was left in a tunnel so black she couldn't tell what she was walking on. Was it darkness itself? There were no walls, no sky or sea, no beginning or end. Just blackness.
My mom used to tell me that death is like a parking lot, whispered Minnie. She sounded close, and like she was trying to reassure herself.
You stay there for just a bit, and then go somewhere else.
Again with the parking lots? Aru joked shakily. She breathed a little easier when she remembered that, in Hinduism, death wasn't a place where you were stuck forever. It was where you waited to be reincarnated. Your soul could live hundreds, maybe even thousands, of lives before you got out of the loop of life and death by achieving enlightenment. A dog woofed in the distance.
Why so serious? Asked a deep voice.
Serious or serious? Said a different voice, this one high-pitched. We know that dog, don't we? Howls at the stars, chases the sun.
You ruin everything. I practiced that opening for a whole year, grumbled the first voice. Now it wasn't so deep.
Well, how was I supposed to know? Said the second.
The Dark Knight is my favorite movie, remember? You should listen to me. I'm Ake, after all. You're only Do.
Just because you were born first doesn't make you more important, said Do.
Yes, it does, said Ake.
No, it doesn't.
Ake? Do? Aru knew those words. They were the names of numbers in Hindi, the most commonly spoken language in India. Ake and Do meant one and two. They sounded like ick and dough.
Aru's mother had grown up speaking Gujarati, a language from the state of Gujarat. Aru didn't speak either Gujarati or Hindi. All she knew were a few words, including some curses, which she hadn't even known were bad words until the time she'd stubbed her toe in front of the priest at temple and just let loose. Her mother had not been amused. When her hand tightened on the golden ball, it turned into a dim flashlight.
Four sets of eyes peered at Aru and Minnie. In the glow of the ball, Aru could make out the shapes of two giant dogs. Ake and Tho each had two rows of eyes and short brindled fur. When they walked forward to sniff the girls, their coats rippled and shimmered. Aru wondered whether they were soft. Minnie had pulled up the collar of her shirt and was pressing it over her nose.
Ermerijik de Dawes!
What?
She surfaced from the cloth.
I'm allergic to dogs!
Of course you are, said Aru.
Are you dead?
Asked Tho, the dog with the high-pitched voice.
I don't think so, replied Minnie.
At the same time, Aru said, Of course not.
Well, you can't come in if you're not dead, said Ake. Those are the rules.
You don't understand, started Aru.
Ah, but we do, said Ake. You have two choices. You can die on your own, or we can help by killing you.
Tho wagged his tail.
I love helping. Helping is fun.
22. Who's a good boy?
Nope, said Aru. No thanks. We'll find another way in. I'm not going anywhere, said Minnie.
Ake yawned as if he'd heard this before. His teeth were really sharp. Why did they need to be that sharp? And was that blood on his fangs?
You don't have to go anywhere to die, little one, said Ake.
That's not what I meant. I'm not going anywhere because this is my kingdom, said Minnie.
Her voice went up at the end.
I am the daughter of the Dharma Raja, and I demand entrance. And I'm the daughter of Lord Indra, butted in Aru.
Minnie glared at her.
Celebrities! Oh, welcome, welcome, said Do. Could I get your autograph? We could do it before or after the whole killing you thing, whichever is most convenient.
Who cares if they're celebrities? Death is the greatest leveler of them all. They are not the first, nor the last. We've carried the souls of queens and murderers and infernal yoga lattes instructors between our teeth, said Ake proudly to the girls. Even the Pandava brothers had to die. Even gods reincarnated in mortal bodies have to die.
That's true, said Do agreeably.
It's just a body, said Ake,
staring down his nose at them.
Leave them behind. Then we'll let you through.
You can get new ones, said Do.
Aru saw the telltale signs of Minnie's confidence waning, glasses off kilter, lip tucked between her teeth. Said Minnie. Ake's teeth gleamed whiter.
We'll make it quick.
I don't really feel like rending someone apart, mourned Do,
even as his fur turned more bristly and his fangs elongated.
Why don't we go out to the cremation grounds instead and bury bone shards? Or we can play catch the beheaded thing. I've always liked that game.
Ake growled.
Not now, Do. This is our job, our dharma, our duty.
Ha, duty, duty.
Do, now is not the time.
It's never the time, Ake. Yesterday you said we could play catch. Did we? No.
Aru nudged Minnie. Just beyond the two dogs, a thin sliver of light appeared. Maybe that was the true door to the kingdom of death. And this was just the stuffy front hall. In which case, the reason it was opening now was probably because it sensed that someone was about to be dead. Aru gulped. If they could just get past these guardians, they could get into the kingdom. Not that Aru was particularly excited about entering. Something seemed to call to her from beyond that door. Something she already knew she did not like. Something that taunted. It reminded her of the sleeper's voice in her ear. But still, anything was better than being torn apart.
Wait till my father hears about this, bellowed Minnie. I mean, my godly father, not the human one. My human one would be mad too, but...
Minnie, Aru interrupted. You're not supposed to explain yourself after you say, wait till my father hears about this.
The girl is a brat, hissed Ake.
I thought she seemed nice, said Do.
His ears flattened against his skull.
I can't believe they're not listening to me, said Minnie, shocked.
Maybe it's because you sounded like a brat, suggested Aru. Ake, who had grown to the size of a respectable townhouse, laughed. It was not a friendly laugh.
It certainly didn't help.
Aru,
said Minnie, her voice squeaking. Aru had little experience with Door of Death dogs, but she did have experience with regular dogs. Last summer, she had taken Mrs. Hutton's poodle, P. Doggy, on a walk, and almost lost her arm when he spotted a cat.
Compact, whispered Aru, not taking her eyes off the two dogs.
And then, in an even softer voice, she said,
Cat.
How shall we choose which one to eat first? Asked Ake. Perhaps in a game of heads or tails?
Heads, said Tho. Are you flipping a coin? Asked Aru. If she could distract them, maybe they wouldn't see what Minnie was conjuring with her compact.
We're not flipping coins, said Tho, excited. We're deciding which one of us gets to go after which parts of you.
But we don't have tails, said Aru. Tho looked at her for a moment longer, as if just realizing that she did not, in fact, possess a tail.
Oh, that's true.
Tho looked to Ake.
Can we still eat them if they don't have tails?
I meant tails in a metaphorical sense, said Ake. What's that mean? Metaphorical means symbolic, though. Honestly, it's like you never paid attention in class. A metaphor is a word representing something else. They don't have tails, per se, but they have a top and a bottom. So the head is the top, and...
What's the opposite of metaphorical?
Literal.
But then...
While the two of them bickered, Aru and Minnie put their heads together, metaphorically and literally. Purple smoke emerged from the compact Minnie was clutching. The smoke took a shape and began to grow a tail and a head, literally.
Ready? Asked Aru.
Ready,
said Minnie. She stayed hunched over the smoke.
Hey! Ake and Tho! Shouted Aru.
She looked at the glowing orb in her hand. She rolled it between her palms, wishing it weren't so tiny. As she thought about it, it actually changed. It grew to the size of a tennis ball. Tho cocked his head. One fat pink tongue lolled out the side of his mouth.
No, growled Ake. It's a trap!
It's a ball!
Aru threw the ball as hard as she could. Tho bounded off after it. Ake stayed put.
If you think that a ball...
Minnie let go of her enchantment. A sleek purple cat leaped out of her arms and away into the darkness. Ake's eyes turned huge. His tail started wagging, and the darkness began to vibrate around them. The crack of light just behind him widened.
Woo!
He shouted, taking off after the cat.
Good boy, said Aru.
Minnie and Aru took off toward the slender doorway of light. As Aru's pumping legs churned the darkness beneath her, the only thing on her mind was this. Maybe she should ask her mother about getting a cat instead of a dog. 23. Soul Index. With the dogs howling cut off behind them, Aru and Minnie went from utter darkness to blinding light. Aru squinted around, trying to get her bearings. When her eyes finally adjusted, she saw that they were standing in a line. One glance around immediately told her they'd come to the right place. These people were definitely not alive. One person was on fire. He yawned and went back to poking at the inside of a toaster with a fork, with a very sheepish expression on his face. Then there was a very sunburned-looking couple in hiking gear sporting some nasty bruises and scratches. And beside Aru, moving quickly and calmly, was a bald girl in a hospital gown clutching a silk rabbit. Everyone was packed tightly together, and the crowd kept growing. Before her, she could just make out the letters of a hanging office sign that said, Karma and Sins, established at the first hiccup of time, please no solicitors. As of the 15th century, indulgences are no longer permitted. Nice try. There was a lot of murmuring around them.
I can't understand what anyone is saying, said Minnie.
Aru caught fragments of words. It didn't sound like English.
Minnie, do you speak any Hindi? I can ask for money and say I'm hungry, said Minnie.
Wow, so useful.
It was useful, said Minnie. When I went to India and had to meet all my mom's relatives, those were the only two phrases I needed. They never taught you more?
Nope, said Minnie. My parents didn't want me and my brother to get confused in school, so they only spoke English. And my Lola got mad when my mom tried to teach me Hindi, because my name was already Indian, and she thought my mom was trying to make me forget I was Filipina, too. And it became this huge fight at home. I don't remember it because I was little. My mom tells it one way, my Lola tells it another. Ugh.
She took a deep breath and then brightened.
I do know some curse words in Tagalog, though. They're really awful, like this one.
But before Aru could hear what Minnie was going to say, a large speaker materialized in the air, shouting,
Next!
Beside them, a tall, pale man wandered forward. A glint of shrapnel stuck out of his leg.
Gelet ni yetragib, he said pleasantly. No drap.
Quick, Minnie, ask for money in Hindi and see what happens.
Aru? I don't think he's speaking Hindi.
Maybe he's speaking Russian? Sounds like Russian.
Aru looked up at the man. Comrade? The man just smiled the kind of uneasy smile one uses when one is utterly confused. Minnie got out her compact, and Aru caught on right away. If it could see through enchantments, maybe it could see through languages, too. Minnie flipped it open. The mirror was now a tiny screen where the man's words scrolled in blue and were translated into English underneath.
He's speaking backward, said Minnie.
She held up the compact to show the words in small green print. Big artery in the leg. Pardon. Why would the dead speak backward? Asked Aru. Minnie tilted the compact from one side to the other, as if she were trying to catch and read all the things that the dead spoke around them.
Maybe because they can't go forward in life anymore?
The man frowned.
Dead cool tnodyoy?
The compact read, You don't look dead. Aru typed out a response and then pronounced it haltingly.
Sknot. Snimative et sti.
Thanks. It's the vitamins.
Next,
boomed the speakers. They shuffled forward once more. The neon sign for karma and sins glowed. Up front, the people in line were doing all kinds of things. Some of them were crossing themselves. Others were crawling forward on their hands and knees, murmuring under their breaths. Beside Aru, Minnie stood rigid.
How can you even look at that?
She asked, her voice hushed. She sounded as if she was about to cry.
Look at what? It's just a sign, like something outside a lawyer's office, said Aru.
Why? What do you see?
Minnie's eyes widened. She turned her head away. Right. I see that too.
Minnie didn't know how to lie, but she didn't sound entirely truthful. Aru suspected she was seeing more than just the sign for karma and sins. Whatever it was, Minnie didn't like it. The line ahead of them slowly dwindled. Now Aru and Minnie stood near the front.
Do you think the kingdom of death looks the same to everyone? Asked Aru.
I doubt it, said Minnie. Maybe it's like that Costco. We're all seeing something different.
Huh.
Where's the hippo that chomps on people?
Pretty sure that's Egyptian mythology, Aru.
Oh. Aru wished that she had a better idea of what to expect when they went through the next door. All she knew was that the celestial weapons were housed somewhere inside this place. But where? And where were they going to find the pool of the past? What if she mistook it for a different pool that was 10 times worse? Like the pool that looks like the past but is actually eternal torture. So far, the kingdom of death was just standing in an absurdly long line, like at an all-you-can-eat buffet or at the DMV, where her mother sometimes dragged her, and the workers looked equal parts smug and furious. The door in front of them opened.
Evom!
shouted a grumpy old woman behind them. She was carrying an orange tabby cat in